This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Carmen Wong Ulrich. So between holiday spending and New Year's resolutions, a lot of us are really geared up to cut where we can and start 2014 fresh and flush. And with that in mind...
Carmen,
what's going on?
Tis that time to answer some of your money questions. And joining me today is Jill Schlesinger. She's a CBS News business analyst and a former colleague of mine. Welcome, Jill.
Great to be with you.
So, Jill, we have on the line Martin. Martin is 31. His wife is in her late 20s. And they have a very interesting conundrum because Martin did what a lot of folks do, which is say, you know what, rent and renting, that's just not good for my money. So we need to buy. But then the trouble is that Martin found out that owning is a very expensive commitment indeed. Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So Martin, talk a little bit about this switch that you made from being a renter to an owner.
Well, about this time last year, my wife and I decided that we would like to buy a home because we've been paying $1,800-ish for renting, and we thought that maybe we should pay down to buy a house. And luckily, we have our family to help us with the down payment, and we were able to find a place that fits within our budget. However, after we purchased the house, we found out that although the mortgage is $1,500, there are other extra cost that comes with owning a home, such as the monthly escrow fee that we pay toward our property tax.
I bet that was a big surprise, Martin.
Oh, yeah. That quickly grew at least almost doubled the cost that we have to pay for our home.
Wow. Hi, Martin. This is Jill. What is the homeowners association fee, just out of curiosity?
We have two because we are a part of a huge community, so it's about $300.
Joe, we see this a lot, though, in terms of really calculating and saying, "Oh, I need to be a homeowner because right now I could afford this much of a mortgage." But that's just tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and even when you say the mortgage, the property tax, I think the big category that people really omit and or at least gloss over is the maintenance. And, you know, you think, oh, I'm buying a brand new house, condo, whatever it is. I'm just telling you, every year something happens. Every time you turn around, you will need a extra $1,000 because of the washing machine breaking or the hot water heater.
Right? I was going to say that's the worst hot water heater.
Classic. And so, but you know, here you are, Martin, you're in it. Where do you stand now? So you're working and does your wife work as well?
So we're both attorneys. However, we're not hired as a permanent. We both are working on projects. Luckily for me, I've been on the same project for 2 years. So my income is relatively stable.
How much do you make?
I make about $6,000 a month, but for my wife, her project comes and goes, and now she's trying to start her own business, clothing design business. I think that will also increase our spending a little bit more, hopefully not that much. My question now is, how do we cut down on the day-to-day spending so we can not to be too...
too behind on everything.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, Martin, because you're a contract, and the thing about working under contracts, which has its pluses and minuses, its pluses is that there's no real cap on how much you can earn. It's not like you're tied to a salary, so you can earn a lot. However, it's unpredictable income. So even somebody who is a contract employee absolutely needs to have more cash on hand, especially if you're a homeowner. And it's really preferable to buy actually less home than you can afford to protect yourself in case there's a downturn. So, Martin, in terms of that mortgage, you say you want to look at your budget. Do you think, though, with your wife starting this new business and you possibly 2 years down the road not knowing for sure that you're going to have another contract, are you considering, are you saying we are staying in this home and we're going to figure out how to make it work? Or would you think about maybe we need to just go smaller on the home and it's just too much money right now?
I think at the moment we are trying to stay in this home. And right now we're able to because of my parents' help, our parents' help. We don't want to depend on them every single time that we need help. We are now kind of like adults now, even though not to them.
Kind of.
But so we don't want to be like any high schooler or even college student where, oh, hey, mom and dad, I need money right now. Can you, give me $1,000 or two just so I can get by. But we don't want it to be that way. So right now, I think we're okay. So in the beginning, if my wife also have projects, all her earning goes into our savings.
That's fantastic. But yeah. even still, though, you're falling behind and getting help. And I want to bring Jill on this one here, Martin.
Okay.
Can you explain to us, because we come across, Jill, these crazy products every once in a while. On the budget that you gave to us, life insurance / IRA, $1,200 a month. What is that?
My parents bought me a life insurance when I was, I think, high school, when my parents and my parents are still working in the U.S. So after I got married, I thought maybe I should need life insurance to protect myself and my wife just in case any accident happens because, you know, either of us have a really huge assets to help us from that. Initially, we had each of us have one universal life and one term. The sales representative said, hey, we have this good deal. Why don't you up your, you know, term life and turn into universal and you can keep whatever amount and you'll be a lower if you just buy universal mm-hmm. again.
Martin, beware of anybody coming to you saying, I got a good deal for you. Jill, what is it, what should he do with this? This is a lot of money every month.
Oh, yeah. We're going to find you $1,000 a month, like in 2 seconds, basically. You know, look, there's two things to consider here. One is, how much life insurance do you really need? Let's start there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're both young. You can run through these calculations in about 5 seconds. Go type in life insurance calculator online, and you will get a lot of different choices. And it'll say, what's your mortgage, blah, 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 and you'll come up with a number. And I'm going to give you a round number. You know, let's say that right now you don't have kids, right?
No.
So you're just for each other. So maybe you need $500,000 or $1 million of term life insurance each. That's it. You're young, you're healthy, this is going to cost you less than $500 a year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get to buy. You buy that and you cover your life insurance needs. You buy life insurance. Term life insurance will cover about 98% of the people out there who need life insurance. About 98% will need term. There are 2% who will need that other more expensive kind of insurance, but you're not in that group. I promise you that. Now you're going to free up all this money because you're not going to put money into a big, fat, universal life insurance policy. So the first thing, as Carmen said, is that you need to beef up your emergency reserve fund. You got to have a year of expenses in the bank. That's that. That's what you need to do.
And no help from the parents then.
And then you don't
need the help.
Exactly. We've gotten your parents out of this. And maybe, just maybe, you can afford to stay in this place. I'm not convinced yet, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sort of thinking that if you had equity in this place and you could get out and you could give your parents the down payment back and you really do want to be independent, then you actually can start for the level playing field. But if you want to stay in it, that's a very easy way to identify a chunk of money. And for your regular old retirement investing, each of you having an IRA or a Roth IRA, you know, probably a Roth for you guys because you're so young, you do it really simply. You go to Vanguard, you go to T. Rowe Price, you go to Fidelity, you open up an account, you have them suck a certain amount of month out of your checking account. That's how you're going to start saving for retirement. But essentially, freeing that chunk of money up should really help give you some flexibility here. You really have to make a decision about this. If you're convinced that you got to stay in this place, that's one way to do it. Then you've just got to go through the way you spend your money with a fine-tooth comb. There's no easy way to do it. It's like saying to somebody, how do I lose weight? Well, you know what? You stop eating and you exercise.
You cut back.
Yeah.
Well, and Martin, the thing is, being a contract employee, it's very risky to buy more home than you really can comfortably afford. If you want to keep the home, just know that things are going to be tight for a while and you're going to have to pay attention to where the money goes. But to Jill's point about this life insurance, there's no need for you to be putting $1,000 into this policy. You absolutely can cut back there. The other costs of the home that you could possibly go at with in terms of that fine-tooth comb are those utilities. You're spending $600 a month on water, electricity, trash, cable phone, all that stuff. And though that seems actually pretty much average for people in certain areas, you can also cut that down as well. So it's more of paying attention to where the cash goes on a monthly basis. Get rid of that policy, putting money into that policy, and you guys can be basically independent and on your own very quickly. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea, but a follow-up is that what is a good budget to spend on, say, utilities and those kind of stuff?
There is no magic number. I wish, Jill, don't we wish we had this magic number and a magic wand and we could just go bing. It really is and depends on you. Now, there are guidelines that you should follow. It is dangerous to have your housing costs, all of those costs that you have there, right now are at about half of your take home.
Yes.
That's dangerous territory.
Yeah, it should be about a third.
Yeah, because you think about it as your budget, your income is like a pie. And everything gets a slice, right? Well, if half of the pie is gone and the only thing you've paid for is the roof over your head, recipe for disaster.
All right, let's not say disaster. That sounds very dramatic.
It is. I'm being dramatic because if you think about it, and it's a good question to ask simply because, Martin, when your housing takes up 50%, there is no breathing room for anything else. So that is something to really think about. And the reason why I say disaster is because, frankly, I'm one of those people that always says, what if? What if your wife's new business doesn't take off? What if you end up having a baby? So if you think about all those what ifs, half of your budget going to your housing seems pretty scary. And Martin, Jill just saved you $1,000 a month.
So go get that money. Don't cancel the policy before you actually get underwritten for your term policy. Don't cancel the old universal life before you get your new term life.
I understand.
All right. Thanks, Martin, so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jill, stay with us, though. We're going to be back with another caller right after this. This is Marketplace Money from APM. My guest this hour is CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger, and we're taking your calls, so let's get back to that phone. Suzanne joins us from Boston. She's a longtime listener. We love longtime listeners. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi there.
Now, Suzanne, you have a very interesting question because you are a resident with your husband in a hospital. Now, you make pretty good money, but you're still in that resident phase, so it's not up there in the six figures. And you have a lot of student loan debt.
Yes.
Tell us about that debt.
I finished medical school 3 years ago with approximately $200,000 of medical student loan debt. Prior to graduation, my school had a financial aid session where an outside company came in to speak with us. And this company encouraged us to take advantage of both public service loan forgiveness and income-based repayments. So my basic understanding of the public service loan forgiveness program is that borrowers can qualify for forgiveness of the remaining balance of their direct loans after they've paid 125 qualifying payments on those loans while fully employed at certain public service employer jobs. And the company at the time was saying that working in the nonprofit hospital setting as a resident or a physician counts towards those payments. So after hearing that, my husband and I decided to take advantage of the program. And right now, we're making the minimum monthly payment toward my student loans, which is approximately $450 a month. But this doesn't even cover the interest. So the total amount of my loan has grown to now $220,000, $100,000. When I make more money, my IBR payments will go up, and then my debt will stop increasing. And our hope is at the end of this 10-year period, the outstanding balance will be forgiven, but I'm getting a little nervous about it. So my questions really are, can I rely on this public service loan forgiveness program to forgive all of this money at the end of 10 years? If I have more money to put down towards these loans, should I do this?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you both work in a public hospital or public setting?
No, just I do.
And this debt is all yours?
Yes.
Jill, this program does exist. It's not like it's in fairy tale land.
No,
but
no, it's true. But you do have to keep working for that this qualifying employer, right? And so I looked it up because you know what? Who knows these things off the top of my head? There's a fabulous website, by the way, for everyone who is listening, studentaid.ed.gov. It's a really an awesome site. But, you know, when you go there and you look at it, it says qualifying employment is any employment with a federal, state, or local government agency, entity, organization or a non-for-profit organization that's been designated as an IRS under basically a 501c3, which is pretty much every hospital that's out there. Many, you know, even some semi-private hospitals are 501c3s. So can I ask you a very personal question? It's just between us and everyone else listening. Which hospital do you work at in Boston?
I work at a small community hospital in Boston.
Okay, that's fine.
Even better.
But that's, yeah, because that's going to be a qualifying institution, right? And so the reality is, if you see yourself continuing to work, you're going to have your residency, and then maybe you're going to be an attending physician at, you know, you're in an area where there's tons of hospitals, then it should work.
It's very, very smart. Now, all the loans, Suzanne, all these loans are federal, yes?
Yes.
So you planned well,
yeah,
my dear. You planned really well, because that is the fact that these loans actually are out there in these loan programs. But what I would recommend is this, because in the past, I've had folks who thought they qualified, and for whatever the reason was, however they were paid, maybe they didn't, or it was only a partial qualification. So, Suzanne, what you need to do is you need to head to the administrative offices of the hospital you're at and talk to them about what you need in terms of paperwork and qualifying information to make sure that you absolutely qualify for this program. Because, my God, $220,000.
It's pretty awesome. Hey, I have another personal question. What's husband's specialty?
He works in technology.
All right. So you're going to wipe this debt out. You're going to have some money to spend. You're going to like create a life together. I mean, if you were burdened by this debt, obviously so many of your choices would be changing, right? I mean, you may not even, I don't know what your specialty is, but, you know, you may say, well, gosh, I guess dermatology does sound good after all, because I've got 200 grand.
I'm not taking insurance anymore, yeah, people.
But I mean, it's really true that you realize that when you assume this kind of debt, your future choices are curtailed. And so by being able to wipe this out, you probably are going to do exactly what you want to do. And that's pretty awesome.
Thank you. Can I ask you one follow-up question to that?
Sure.
Which is, if we could put some more money down towards this debt, does it make sense to at least pay off enough so that it's not growing in terms of interest? Because that's what makes me really anxious.
Because you're going into the whole moral hazard territory. How much do you feel like you should pay? I believe that the program exists for a reason. You are performing a service by working in a community hospital. Therefore, the reward for performing that service is, first of all, your pay is lower, but you will be able to have this loan forgiven. So I see absolutely no reason to put more money towards that loan. You already get paid less than someone who works at a big hospital. So basically, your income is cut from it, and the reward that you get is you get this loan forgiven at the end.
Yeah, it's not like you're gaming the system. You're not, you know, borrowing a bunch of money and then going bankrupt. It is a program
Suzanne's feeling guilty right now, Jill. She's feeling very guilty.
So you know what you can do to feel less guilty is you can keep doing your job. You can put away your money. You can put money into your 403B. Get yourself on your feet so that, you know, the world doesn't have to ever have to take care of you. How's that?
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Suzanne.
Hi.
And thank you so much, Jill Schlesinger, for joining us today from CBS News.
Great to be with you.
So what do you want help with this coming year? Let us know. I want to hear from you. Go to marketplace.org and click on Ask Carmen.